Welcome to Akhatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhatra AI.
So today we're stepping into the very atmospheric streets of a haunted Barcelona. We're going deep into the secrets within one of the most, well, beloved novels of recent times, Carlos Ruiz Zafón's The Shadow of the Wind.
Ah, yes, La Sombra del Viento.
Yeah.
It really catapulted Zafón onto the world stage, didn't it? And it kicked off his amazing Cemetery Forgotten books tetralogy.
It did, and Zafón himself, he was from Barcelona, and he had this profound belief in storytelling, almost like it was magic.
Definitely. He saw it as his vital act, you know, preserving memory, fighting against being forgotten.
And you absolutely feel that philosophy woven into the novel's fabric. It's such a skillful mix. You've got gothic mystery, heart-wrenching romance, historical fiction, all under this sort of melancholic shadow.
And the setting is key. Barcelona, but specifically in those decades right after the Spanish Civil War, it's somber, it's wounded. Zafón almost treats the city itself as a character.
Like a living, breathing soul, as some say. It adds so much depth.
It's the perfect setting for buried secrets, really. And the whole story pivots on this one almost sacred moment. We meet Daniel Semper, a young boy.
Who's lost his mother, right?
Exactly. And his father takes him to this hidden secret place, the Cemetery of Forgotten Books. It's this sanctuary for lost literature.
An incredible concept, a library where books wait for someone to rescue them from oblivion.
And Daniel's given this task, this duty. Choose one book, adopt it, keep its story alive. He picks The Shadow of the Wind by an author named Julian Carax.
And that single choice, it's like the turning point, the end of his childhood, really, and the start of something much darker and more dangerous.
Precisely. Daniel reads the book, becomes completely captivated, obsessed even, with finding out about this mysterious author, Julian Carax.
But it's not straightforward.
Not at all. The deeper he digs, the more he realizes Carax has been, well, almost deliberately erased. Vanished from history. It's like there's an act of force trying to wipe him out.
And then things take a genuinely sinister turn, don't they? This search turns from literary curiosity into something threatening.
Yeah, suddenly he's confronted by this really menacing figure, a man with scars who smells of burnt paper. It's quite vivid.
Laying Kuber. He even takes the name of the devil from Carax's own book.
Right, and this Kuber tells Daniel flat out, I'm hunting down every last copy of Carax's books to burn them. Destroy them completely.
So Daniel suddenly realizes the book he adopted, the one he treasures, it might actually be the very last copy in existence.
Exactly, which transforms everything. It's no longer just about curiosity. It's a personal, dangerous mission. Why does someone want to erase this author, this story, so completely?
It's a fantastic setup. The conflict is instantly clear. It's a desperate fight to save a story, a life, from being utterly forgotten.
And this creates that fascinating structure you mentioned earlier, the story within a story.
Hmm.
Daniel's own coming of age, his own struggles, run parallel to uncovering Carax's long-buried tragedy.
Almost like echoes across time. So Daniel is plunged into this maze of Barcelona's hidden past. It's clearly too much for a young boy on his own. He needs help. Who becomes important in his quest? Let's start with Daniel himself.
Well, Daniel grows up through this process. He starts as this quite lonely, maybe naive boy, but he becomes this thoughtful young man who's forced to confront the cities and life's darker side. His relationships evolve, too. There's an early infatuation with Clara Barceló.
Which is quite fleeting, isn't it?
Yes, but later he finds a real anchor in Beatriz Aguilar, or Bia. She becomes central to his stability. But I think the character everyone remembers, the one who really balances Daniel's seriousness, is Fermín Romero de Torres.
Ooh, Fermín, he's just brilliant, one of literature's great companions. Daniel and his father find him living rough, basically rescue him.
And he instantly becomes this larger-than-life figure, mentor, protector, source of these incredible, witty, sometimes cynical pronouncements.
But he's much more than just comic relief, isn't he? His backstory is incredibly dark.
Absolutely. He's not just talk. Fermín is a former spy, and he suffered terribly. He was tortured in Montjuic prison.
Which is a name that carries real weight in that historical context. It represents the brutality of the Franco regime after the war.
Exactly. Surviving that gives Fermín this unique blend of cynicism and fierce loyalty. He literally carries the scars of that era. His journey is one of trying to find redemption, to reclaim his life.
That context is so important. The political oppression isn't just wallpaper. It shaped these characters, particularly Fermín. It makes his resilience and his wisdom even more potent, like that famous quote about destiny.
Ah, yes, when he tells Daniel, Destiny is usually just around the corner. He pauses, then says, but what Destiny does not do is make house calls. You have to go for it.
It's such a powerful idea, especially in that setting. It's about agency, about not waiting passively for things to change. You have to act.
Precisely. It's a survival guide in a way.
And then, providing the stark contrast to Fairman's resilience, we meet the novel's true villain, Inspector Francisco Javier Fumero.
Fumero is genuinely chilling. He's not just a corrupt cop. He's like the embodiment of the regime's cruelty that Fermin somehow survived.
But it's personal for him too, isn't it? It's not just about power.
No, it's deeply personal. He's fueled by this toxic mixed jealousy, bitter class resentment, going back to his childhood connection with Carax, and this really disturbing psychopathic obsession with Penelope Aldaya.
The woman Carax loved.
The very same. So Fumero uses his police authority, his state power, but the fire inside him is pure personal hatred. That makes him incredibly dangerous.
And that personal vendetta rooted in class and obsession is what keeps the past tragedy constantly threatening the present. Okay, let's unpack that central tragedy. What were the secrets Daniel and Fermin had to piece together about Julian Carax's past?
Well, it starts as this grand, almost operatic, forbidden love story. Julian Carax, a gifted but poor hatmaker's son, falls madly in love with Penelope Aldaya.
And she's the daughter of this incredibly wealthy and incredibly cruel industrialist, Don Ricardo Aldaya.
Exactly. Their love is passionate, immediate, but completely doomed by the rigid class structure of the time. A union was unthinkable.
So they planned to run away.
They tried to elope to Paris, but the plan failed catastrophically. Julian ends up fleeing alone, believing Penelope changed her mind, that she abandoned him.
But that wasn't the truth. The reality was far worse.
Much worse. The full horror comes out later, primarily through the testimony of Nuria Monfort, who knew the family and tried to protect Julian's memory. She reveals Penelope didn't abandon Julian. She was discovered, dragged back, and essentially imprisoned by her own family in the decaying Aldaya mansion.
Imprisoned while pregnant.
Yes, pregnant with Julian's child. And the story becomes almost unbearable here. She died in childbirth, alone and terrified in that locked room.
And the child.
The baby was stillborn. In an act of supreme cruelty and to cover up the shame, her parents just left her body there initially. Later, they buried the infant secretly in the family crypt.
That is just devastating. It explains the profound sense of sorrow that permeates the book, that haunts the city.
It's the dark heart of the mystery. Absolute unforgivable cruelty driven by pride and social standing.
But even within that darkness, Zafan gives us a moment of incredible sacrifice, doesn't he? Through Julian's best friend, Mikhail Molinar.
Mikhail, yes. His story is heartbreaking in its own right. He secretly loved Penelope too, but his loyalty to Julian was absolute. During the chaos of the war, when Fumero was hunting for Carax.
Fumero, who already hated him.
Exactly. Mikhail made the ultimate sacrifice. He pretended to be Julian Carax. He let Fumero arrest and execute him in Julian's place.
Wow. So he saved Julian's life, allowing him to escape, but Julian never knew the full story.
Not for a long time. It's a debt hanging over the narrative, one Daniel eventually understands.
And this whole tragic history, it sets up that powerful theme of mirrors and doubles. Daniel's own life, especially his burgeoning love for B, starts to look unnervingly like Julian and Penelope's story.
It does. You're constantly wondering, is he fated to repeat this tragedy? Can he break the cycle? It creates this incredible dramatic tension.
Which leads us towards the climax. We need to understand Laim Kuber, the book burner. Who is he, really?
Well, when Daniel finally confronts this shadowy figure in the ruins of the Aldaya mansion, the scene of Penelope's suffering, the horrifying truth, comes out. Laim Kuber, the devil, systematically destroying Carax's legacy, is Julian Carax himself.
The author is destroying his own work. Why?
He's completely broken. Shattered by loss, guilt, believing his books, his entire creative output, were somehow cursed, responsible for the tragedy. So he returned to Barcelona under this demonic persona as an act of self-annihilation to erase himself and his work from existence.
That's a profound statement on the weight of trauma. He's haunting the very place where his love died.
Exactly. And the final confrontation happens right there. Inspector Fumero tracks them down, the embodiment of all their shared past pain and hatred.
The final showdown.
Yes, a violent, bloody climax in the decaying mansion. Fumero is finally killed, bringing his reign of terror to an end. But not before he manages to shoot Julian.
Fatally.
Julian dies, but perhaps finds some measure of peace in the end.
But Daniel survives. He gets wounded, but he lives. He and B manage to escape the mirroring tragedy.
They do. Daniel recovers, marries B. His life chooses a different path, one of redemption, not ruin. He drakes the tragic pattern.
And the novel ends with this sense of closure, of the cycle being renewed, but in a positive way.
Beautifully so. Daniel honors Julian not by letting him be forgotten, but by writing his story down, preserving it. He takes on that sacred duty himself.
Passing on the torch.
Literally. Years later, Daniel takes his own son, whom he names Julian Semper, to the Cemetery of Forgotten Books,
right,
initiating him into the same tradition, the same responsibility.
It brings everything full circle. The shadow passes, but the story remains. It's a powerful affirmation of Zafon's core belief in the immortality of stories.
Absolutely.
Okay, we've traced the intricate plot. Now let's spend a bit of time on the big ideas, the themes that make The Shadow of the Wind such a resonant, enduring work.
Well, perhaps the most central, the one embodied by the cemetery itself, is what you call the sacred duty of the reader. It's not just a quaint idea. Zafon presents it as a real responsibility. Remember what Daniel's father said.
About books having souls.
Exactly. Every book, every volume you see here has a soul. Every time a book changes hands, every time someone runs his eyes down its pages, its spirit grows and strengthens. It's like a contract between the reader and the story.
And keeping that story alive is crucial because of the haunting power of the past. The novel makes it clear that the past, personal trauma, family secrets, the wounds of the Civil War, never really stays buried. Fumero is the past, refusing to heal, poisoning the present.
Right. And the Franco regime's attempt to control memory, to enforce a kind of cultural amnesia, is implicitly critiqued. By saving Carrick's story, Daniel is performing an act of resistance, not just solving a puzzle. He's fighting against official oblivion.
That's a political act, in a sense.
In a very real sense, yes.
Yeah.
Fighting the erasure of inconvenient truths.
Then there's the powerful exploration of love and obsession. We see love in its purest form, like between Julian and Penelope initially, but it gets twisted and destroyed by external forces class, family cruelty, and internal ones, like Fumero's consuming pathological obsession.
And you contrast that destructive spiral with Daniel and Bay's relationship. Their love is tested, certainly, forged in danger, but it ultimately becomes grounding, redemptive. It leads to life, marriage, continuity.
So the novel shows how the same powerful emotion, love, can lead either to creation and connection or to destruction and vendetta, depending on how it's channeled in the context it exists within.
Precisely. It's about whether love builds or consumes.
And finally, the whole quest is fundamentally about defining identity. Daniel starts out looking for Julian Carax, trying to understand who this author was. But in doing so, he's forced to figure out who he is.
There's that quote, books are mirrors. You only see in them what you already have inside you.
Right. The search for Carax forces Daniel to confront darkness, tragedy, the potential for repeating the past. But ultimately, he has to forge his own path, make his own choices, define his own story. He discovers himself through discovering Carax.
It's a profound journey of self-discovery disguised as a literary mystery.
This story really serves as a powerful reminder, doesn't it? That our lives are constantly being shaped by narratives, by stories we might not even be fully aware of.
It may be that the most vital way we connect as humans is simply by keeping each other's stories alive, protecting them from silence, from being lost like whispers on the wind. Mandatory closing line. This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.